Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're doing something a bit different. We're taking just one really comprehensive source document.
Just one source?
Exactly. And using it to unpack the career of an American creative. And honestly, her path is less a straight line, more like a series of, I don't know, artistic explosions.
That's a good way to put it. Detonations, maybe. We're looking at how someone moves, and pretty successfully, too, from something as raw as blue comedy.
Right, really out there stuff.
To the, well, the very refined world of award-winning international photojournalism. It's quite a jump.
It really is. So our mission today, using this single source, is to trace that evolution. We're talking about Felicia Michaels, born 1963. Known as a stand-up, absolutely.
I know, for sure. Primarily known that way.
But the source makes it clear she's way more than that. TV personality, filmmaker, and this is the kicker. A globally recognized fine art photographer.
Yeah, and that's the core of it, isn't it? That fluidity. How does someone pivot so intentionally? How do those skills, like keen observation, which you need for comedy, how do they transfer?
And the source we have is fantastic for this. It gives us all these details, you know, from growing up as a military kid.
All that moving around.
To winning Star Search, which was huge back then.
Massive platform.
So this isn't just a list of jobs. It feels more like a blueprint for how you can maybe control your own image across completely different creative fields.
And that duality is the central question, I think. How do you go from being the sensual feminist on stage, which is all about being provocative, immediate, spoken.
Right, connecting with a live audience.
To winning gold in photojournalism in Paris, where the connection is, well, silent, visual, documented. That shift. It's just phenomenal. It suggests this deep understanding of people, of vulnerability, no matter the medium.
Okay, I'm hooked already. Let's dive in. Where does the source tell us to start?
Right at the beginning. Her early life. Hashtag #TagTag2. Early foundations and influences.
Okay, so if we want to understand a comic who really relies on observation, you have to look at where those skills were honed, right?
Absolutely. You have to look at the early years.
And for Felicia Michaels, the source paints a picture of, well, a lot of movement. Instability, even. Born on Fort Riley, Kansas, father in the Army.
Yeah, that military background is key. It's not just changing houses, it's constant displacement, always the new environment.
And it wasn't just within the U.S. The source mentions an early international stint.
That's right. 2 years living in Berlin, where her mother was originally from. Her mother was German. So imagine that as a young kid.
Wow.
Before you're even properly in school, you're already dealing with new languages, different social rules, whole other cultures.
You'd have to become a quick study.
Exactly. You'd have to learn to read people, read the room just to fit in, or even just to function socially. That's basically ground level training for a comedian, isn't it? That constant adaptation.
That makes sense. So that period of moving around eventually stopped.
It did. The family settled down in Fountain, Colorado. But just because they stopped moving didn't mean life suddenly got stable.
Ah, what happened then?
Well, her parents separated, and she was primarily raised by her mother. But there's a specific event the source highlights, something really tough.
Okay.
That you could argue really shaped her resilience and maybe even that darker blue sense of humor later on.
Oh, was it?
When Michaels was only 14, her mother had a stroke.
Oh, wow. 14.
Yeah. And it left her physically disabled. Think about that impact on a teenager. Suddenly you're dealing with caregiving, maybe money worries, doctors.
That's a massive weight. Forces you to grow up fast.
Absolutely. And humor, especially that darker, edgier kind, it's often a way to cope, right? A defense mechanism for dealing with real pain. It gives her comedy this grounding in lived experience. She knows hardship.
So it's not just jokes about trivial stuff.
Not at all. She's seen the difference.
And there's another interesting contrast in the source from that period, isn't there? While all this is happening at home, her father's career path.
Yeah, it's fascinating. After leaving the military, he completely switched gears, became a film projectionist, and actually operated a drive-in movie theater in Stockton, California.
A drive-in. So you've got this, like, intense reality at home.
Right. The caregiving, the seriousness of it all, grounded reality, plus that military structure from her upbringing.
But then also this world of escape. Movies, performance, the whole drive-in culture.
Exactly. It's this kind of dual exposure, the discipline and reality on one side, and the performance, the light, the business of movies on the other. So she saw performance and visual media early on, not just as art, but as a job, a business.
So putting it all together, this mix of instability, having to observe constantly, then this major trauma, requiring some kind of coping mechanism.
Yeah, humor often fills that role.
And this early exposure to film and performance, you can really start to see the roots, can't you? Why her comedy might lean towards being both really observational, but also, you know, blue, honest about the messy stuff.
It almost demands a kind of radical honesty, doesn't it? The best observational comics, they're the ones pointing out what everyone else is trying to politely ignore. Her whole life, it seems, kind of forced her to look past the surface, which is, well, perfect fuel for a provocateur. ##Tag3, the evolution of the stand-up persona.
Okay, let's move to when she actually starts performing. The source says she started stand-up at 18. That's incredibly young.
It really is, 18. But the jobs she held right before stepping onto the stage, they sound like pretty intense learning experiences themselves, especially around performance and, well, gender dynamics.
What kind of jobs are we talking about?
The source is quite specific. She'd been a wet t-shirt contestant,
okay,
a stripper, and a cocktail waitress.
Right, so not your typical office jobs.
Definitely not. And you can't just dismiss these as like random things she did for money. They provided this really raw, high-stakes education. Performance of sexuality, the dynamics between men and women in those specific contexts.
That's a really crucial point. So when she got on stage, she wasn't just guessing about male-female dynamics or sexuality.
No, she had firsthand professional experience, intense experience, dealing with being looked at, with desire, power dynamics in those interactions. It gave her this, I don't know, almost expert-level insight into what would become her main subject matter.
So it wasn't just for shock value later on. It came from a place of knowing.
Exactly. It gave her the confidence, maybe the authority, to tackle subjects others might shy away from. She could frame it as observation, as experience, not just, you know, dirty jokes for the sake of it. It elevates it. Comedy as a sociological tool, almost.
Which leads us perfectly into this big shift the source mentions. In the 1990s, she made a very deliberate change to her stage identity.
Yes, this was conscious, strategic. The source says she actively moved away from the dumb blonde stereotype.
Which must have been tempting, right? That was a marketable box for female comics then.
Very marketable. So rejecting it was a risk, but yeah, it was an act of like artistic self-definition, getting rid of that limiting stereotype.
What did she replace it with?
Something much more interesting. The source calls her a soft-spoken provocateur.
Soft-spoken provocateur. I like that. The contrast.
It's brilliant, isn't it? The material is edgy, explicit, but the delivery is controlled, maybe even intimate. And that combination let her really specialize in what's called blue comedy.
We should probably define that for listeners who aren't familiar.
Right. Blue comedy basically thrives on, well, off-color material. Sexual themes, stuff that might be considered offensive, definitely boundary pushing. It's aimed squarely at adults who appreciate that kind of raw honesty.
And what specifically was she provoking people about? What are her themes?
The source highlights a few core areas. Deep dives into male-female relationship dynamics.
Okay, drawing on that earlier experience.
Yeah, exactly. Also, dirty thoughts, exploring that internal landscape. And critically, this idea of the sensual feminist.
Sensual feminist. That sounds like the heart of it.
I think it is. It's the thesis, really. It's not just being raunchy. It's using frank talk about female sexuality to claim autonomy, agency. It's taking control of the narrative around female desire, something maybe connected to those earlier jobs.
So flipping the script on who's in control of the gaze.
Precisely. Making the personal political, but also funny. The source emphasizes that sexuality wasn't just a phase for her. It was and is a fundamental ongoing theme.
And this unique evolved persona, it got noticed big time.
Oh yeah, her national debut came as a grand champion on Star Search, winning that back then. That was the launch pad, the biggest mainstream boost a comic could possibly get.
It seems almost contradictory though, doesn't it? Winning a mainstream family-friendly talent show with a persona rooted in blue comedy.
It's a fascinating paradox. It means that despite the edgy material, she had this underlying charm, this delivery, something universally appealing enough to win over a primetime network audience. That versatility is pretty rare.
So where did that win lead?
Appearances everywhere. Showtime, MTV, VH1, NBC, the usual suspects for a hot comic. But the source points out something really unexpected, proof of that versatility.
Go on.
She appeared twice on ABC's Full House.
Full House. The Olsen twins. Cut it out. Full House.
The very same. Squeaky clean family sitcom.
Wow. How do you even manage that? Toggling between the blue comedy circuit where you're deliberately pushing buttons.
Yeah. Saying the unsayable.
And then showing up on the most wholesome show on television. That takes incredible control. Did the source mention any, like, whiplash from that? Any tension?
It doesn't explicitly talk about tension, no. But the fact she could do it speaks volumes. She mastered the art of, what, code switching? She could be the charming performer for the masses, but keep that sharp observational edge for her core audience.
Operating both worlds.
Exactly. Which makes her a commercially successful provocateur. You can be edgy, but you also have to be, you know, bookable. And that ability to exist in that mainstream adjacent space, well, it set the stage for one of the biggest what-ifs of 90s TV comedy. #, #5E Media, film, and the creative cross-pollination.
Right, speaking of being right there, in the mix of that mid-90s comedy boom, we have to talk about the Friends anecdote, the almost Phoebe story.
Ah, yes, the source confirms it. She auditioned for Phoebe Buffay on Friends.
Which is just, obviously Lisa Kudrow got the part and was iconic.
Absolutely, but the fact that Felicia Michaels was seriously considered, that's significant. Think about Phoebe's character.
Quirky, eccentric,
yeah,
kind of grounded in a slightly weird reality.
Exactly. A bit damaged, maybe, but funny and honest about it. It feels like a natural fit for a comic known for blending oddball observations with a certain raw honesty about life's difficulties. She had that toned down from her blue comedy and, bizarrely, her Full House spots.
It totally places her right in that alternative comedy scene that was exploding then. And she wasn't just doing TV appearances. She was active in indie film, too.
Very active. The source lists three film involvements. First, Smart Alex, which was directed by Steve Odekirk.
Known comedy guy, Ace Ventura writer.
Right. Then, the second film really shows her stepping up her involvement. Los Enchiladas.
Directed by the legendary Mitch Hedberg.
The one and only. But here's the crucial detail the source adds. She didn't just act in it. She was also the line producer.
Okay, hold on. Line producer, that sounds important, but what does that actually involve? Why is that a big deal for understanding her trajectory?
It's a huge deal. A line producer is basically the operations manager of a film set. They handle the budget day to day, manage the schedule, hire crew, negotiate deals, make sure everything runs smoothly and on time. It's all logistics, organization, business.
So not a performing role at all. It's behind the scenes making it happen.
Completely. The fact that she took on this demanding, non-glamorous role shows a major pivot. It demonstrates she had serious organizational and business chops, not just talent in front of an audience. She could deliver a finished product, manage the process. That's a different skill set entirely.
That's a really important piece of the puzzle. She also kept connections to the comedy world, appeared in that documentary.
Yeah, later on in 2010, she was in I Am Comic, directed by Jordan Brady, and she had a regular role in a TV show called Parental Discretion.
But there's another piece of media exposure we can't skip over from the 90s. A big one.
You mean Playboy.
Exactly. The source notes she posed nude for the October 1992 issue.
And when you think about her whole sensual feminist comedy persona we discussed, the Playboy shoot fits right in, doesn't it?
Also.
Well, it wasn't just about taking her clothes off. It was a very visible, very public statement. Using this massive platform to embody the very autonomy and control over female sexuality that she was exploring on stage. It was almost like reinforcing her brand, her provocative, self-defined image on a huge scale.
Taking control of the narrative again.
Exactly. But the real proof of her shift towards serious production, towards documentation, that comes with her own film project.
The one she wrote and directed.
Yes. And this wasn't just a little indie project. It got major industry recognition outside of comedy circles.
Tell us about it.
She wrote and directed a short film called In the Weeds in 2010. And here's the payoff for that line producing experience, maybe. The film won a Cyan Golden Eagle Award.
Cyan Golden Eagle. What's the significance of that particular award?
Cyan Awards have been around for ages, recognizing excellence in, like, non-theatrical films, documentaries, educational films, high-quality shorts intended for professional use or wider distribution beyond just festivals. Winning one means your work is seen as having real craft, real quality production value. It's a serious industry nod.
So this confirms her transition. She wasn't just a performer trying directing. She was recognized as a legitimate filmmaker, especially in that documentary or high-quality short-form style.
Absolutely. It's the bridge, really. From blue comedy performer to Cyan-winning director, that's the path that leads logically towards her work in photojournalism. She's now a proven director of documentary-style visuals.
And even as she's doing this, she stays current in the media landscape. The source mentions podcasting.
Right. In the early 2010s, digital media is taking off, and she jumps in, co-hosted a popular weekly podcast, Beauty and the Beast, with Joey Diaz.
Another comedian. So keeping that conversational comedy muscle flexed.
Yeah, but in a new format, showing she could adapt, stay relevant, and it wasn't just a small side project.
No, was it successful?
Very. The source notes, it was nominated for Funniest Podcast by the Podcast Awards in 2012. So that unique voice, maybe combined now with her producer's eye for shaping content, it translated perfectly to this new long-form audio world. She had staying power.
Okay, this feels like the summit of the deep dive. The pivot from performer, director, podcaster to photographer, a silent observer. This is the most maybe surprising turn.
It is remarkable. It seems like a complete change of medium, but, and this is crucial, it wasn't really a change of theme. The source is clear. She's a working photographer. And the subject she chose for her big project. That's where it all connects back.
Let's get into that. The 2008 project, Stand Up, Strip Down.
Yeah.
The concept alone, using her unique position. It's brilliant.
Isn't it? The title itself, Stand Up, Strip Down, it's like her own career in miniature. Stripping away the persona, the project, the source says, documents comedians and, I'm quoting here, the mystery of what happens backstage in the shadows that lead from the green room to the power of the stage.
Wow. Using her camera to capture that vulnerability before and after the performance.
Exactly. The vulnerability inherent in putting yourself out there.
So how do those skills transfer? A great stand-up needs impeccable timing, right? Knowing when to build tension, when to release it with a laugh. How does that translate to taking still photos?
I think the core skills are remarkably similar. It's all about observation, timing, and having an eye for tension. A comedian sees the absurdity or the pain in a moment and frames it with words.
Okay.
A photojournalist sees the emotional truth in a moment, maybe a gesture, a look in the eyes, that flicker of doubt, and frames it visually. In comedy, the setup builds tension. In photography, the composition, the captured moment itself holds the tension.
And because she lived that backstage world.
She had an advantage. She could anticipate those emotional moments, the nerves before going on, the deflation or relief afterwards. She wasn't just some outsider taking pictures of famous people. She was documenting her peers, her colleagues, in these incredibly charged private moments.
That insider status. It's not just about access, is it? It's about trust.
That's absolutely key. An outsider might get a posed shot. But because they likely trusted her, understood she got it, she could capture something more real, that unguarded moment in the shadows. They knew she understood the weight of it all.
So the photos become this really profound, almost anthropological study of her own profession, done from the inside.
Precisely, a documentary exploration.
And this project, Stand Up, Strip Down, wasn't just praised by friends, it got serious international awards.
Major awards. At the 2008 Prix de la Photographie, Paris, often called PX3, we really need to emphasize how prestigious this is.
Okay, tell us, what is PX3?
It's one of the top global competitions for professional and fine art photography, judged by major figures in the industry. Winning there means your work is considered visually excellent on an international level.
And what did she win specifically?
This is what's staggering. She won gold in the category of photojournalism performing arts. And even bigger picture, she won the overall second place prize in photojournalism.
Second place in all photojournalism.
Second place, photojournalism is about telling true stories visually, documenting reality. This puts her work right alongside serious, established documentary photographers. It's this incredible validation that the observational skill she honed telling jokes on stage, it translated directly into a globally recognized form of visual art and communication.
So that really answers our opening question, doesn't it? The skill set, that ability to see and capture a moment of tension. Whether it's funny or deeply human, it's completely portable. It connects Star Search to a gold medal in Paris. Incredible. #tag6, achievements, albums, and conclusion. Okay, before we wrap up, let's just make sure we circle back and properly acknowledge her achievements, specifically within comedy. Even while she was branching out, her original craft was still getting major recognition.
Absolutely. She wasn't just dabbling elsewhere. She remained a force in stand-up. The source notes she was nominated twice for Funniest Female Comic at the American Comedy Awards.
Which is voted on by peers,
yeah.
Right? Industry recognition.
Exactly. That signifies real respect within the comedy world. And she didn't just get nominated. In 1999, she won the award, tied actually with Etta May, another powerhouse comic.
So winning that cements her place. One of the defining female comics of that era.
No question.
And this work is captured on albums too.
Yes. The source mentions too. Her first was called Lewd Awakenings on the What a Record Shaha Records label, the title itself.
Lewd Awakenings, perfect for the sensual feminist persona, right?
Yeah.
Clever, provocative.
Exactly. It perfectly packages that blend of intelligence and raw subject matter. And she kept that focus. Her second CD came out in 2011 called Chew on
So
This.
you on this, okay.
And the source says it, quote, continues where Lewd Awakenings left off. So consistency. A dedicated thematic voice spanning really decades of performing.
So when we pull back and look at this whole arc, the source lays out this journey from, you know, that unstable childhood
The military brat years.
to the discipline of being a line producer,
Managing budgets, schedules.
from the raw, confrontational style of Blue Comedy,
Yeah.
the sensual feminist, all the way to the quiet, artistic excellence of award-winning photojournalism. What's the big takeaway here for the listener? What does this whole picture tell us about a creative life?
I think it tells us that a creative career doesn't have to be one thing. It doesn't have to be linear. It can be a series of investigations into certain themes just using different tools.
So Felicia Michaels used her observation skills for comedy.
Right, to build that unique stage persona. Then she used production skills, maybe learned partly from line producing, to control the message behind the camera with it in the weeds.
And then she used her insider access, her eye for detail, her understanding of vulnerability.
To document her own community, her own world in Stand Up Strip Down. It's like she kept circling back to themes of performance, vulnerability, and honesty, but just changed the medium.
It really is the ultimate example of using your life experience, even the really hard stuff, to fuel creativity across totally different, sometimes conflicting fields: performance, production, observation. She mastered all three.
Yeah, her journey really confirms that core talent, the ability to see truth, to see tension, and convey it that's incredibly portable. You know, the focus needed to manage a film budget and the sensitivity needed to capture a fleeting backstage moment. They might seem worlds apart, but maybe they both come down to meticulous, focused attention. Hashtag, check, 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 check. Outro.
Well, this deep dive into Felicia Michaels, using just that one source, has definitely revealed someone far more complex, far more strategic, I think, than just the label stand-up comedian captures. We track that deliberate pivot.
Yeah, from the dumb blonde stereotype she rejected.
Right, to that soft-spoken provocateur, which amazingly put her in the running for Phoebe on
And
Friends.
then we followed her as she really took control behind the camera, directing in the weeds, getting that shiny golden eagle.
Which is serious recognition.
Totally, and culminating really in that incredible artistic achievement with Stand Up Strip Down, winning gold for photojournalism in Paris. Just
Yeah.
wow.
What really strikes me looking back at it all is how intentionally she seemed to use every platform she had. The raw comedy, defining the sensual feminist, the Playboy shoot, even the vulnerability in her photos. It all feels like part of this larger project of controlling her own story.
That's a great point. And it leaves us, and you, the listener, with a fascinating question to think about, doesn't it? Given this huge range, mainstream sitcoms, edgy adult comedy, serious documentary art, how does that core skill, that act of
Like
observation,
seeing the tension, whether it's funny or poignant.
exactly, how does that ability allow a creative person to constantly redefine themselves? To control their own narrative and avoid getting stuck in those limiting industry boxes or stereotypes. It seems like she never let the label define the work. The work always defined the label.
That's definitely something to chew on. A really powerful takeaway. Thanks for walking us through that source.
My pleasure. It was a fascinating story to unpack.
Until our next deep dive, thank you for joining us.